LinuxLink Tech Show. The LinuxLink Tech Show is on. Your link to the latest in GNU Linux and technology. An hour of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open source, open mics. Live from the LinuxLink Tech Show studio, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up, and take it away. Take it away.
Hand him that mic. He's going to have to go back and forth between them.
You need like a professional grade sign on it.
Or are you going to have to use this one?
They both work?
These are not.
Do this even.
These are not directional mics. You know what I mean?
You can do mixed down with this.
Are we sure this is recording?
The only thing with this is, it's difficult to do individual track mixing, but you can do it. It's doable.
What?
He just wants to do like quick and dirty like musical recordings, so like him playing guitar.
Can mix a little bit of mixing and putting one track on top of the other kind of thing.
You could do this. Just do a little with this.
Our door would probably
but
be better.
That's like a hardcore application.
Really our door, good. Yeah. But as soon as Jonah edit or you want to make
hello?
Sure this doesn't fall up and whack him in the face.
Hello.
You're not going to see it over there because now he's recording on this thing.
Respect.
Oh, you got that?
All right.
Some proprietary piece of garbage.
That one
why don't
things
you know what?
Work, so we why don't we try to do it as many different ways as we can?
Why don't we slip your eye on it?
Right at the same time?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do that.
All move at the same time. Make sure
yep.
We get
the.
What the hell is this?
It's at the Intel booth.
One
is that all it does?
It's a long time.
You're recording, right?
I'm recording.
All right.
Oh, no.
We need to get a couple people who can block out the PR person there, so then you can talk freely.
No, I always talk freely. My PR
good.
People are great.
That's excellent.
All right.
And we're here talking today with Miguel de Casa.
That's right, Miguel de Casa.
And we're going to be talking about GNOME and Mono, yes?
Yes, that sounds great.
And you're working for Novell?
I work for Novell today? These days, yeah. I run the Mono project at Novell, and I still work very closely with Nat Friedman, which is now in charge of the desktop effort at Novell. So I'm still involved in the desktop in a tangential way, but I'm having fun, and Mono seems to be working out.
Yeah, it's starting to really take off, isn't it?
Yeah, well, we were really, I mean, when we started Mono, the idea was we wanted to improve our own productivity. It was completely selfish, right? We had built Evolution. It was a painful process, and we're looking for new tools, new ways of building software. And Microsoft came up with this .NET thing, and what was interesting there is that it resonated very much with us. A lot of the features that they added to the language and to the runtime were things that we were looking for ourselves. So we built Mono for our own purposes, and we've been building a lot of apps that we felt were missing on the Linux space with Mono. So things like F-Spot for photo management, Banshee for media playback, and we can go into the details of why we did that. There's a desktop search that we actually came out with desktop search before Apple announced Spotlight. It's just that we announced it to a bunch of hackers in Norway, and nobody realized that we had it before Apple for the first time in history. Yeah, Beagle. Right, the first time that we beat everybody to the punch and only the open source community learned, and then the big bang came afterwards from big companies. And it's been working out. What I find most interesting about Mono, perhaps, is that we've been kind of moving into a mode of operation, a mode of hacking, where we have one or two developers taking over an entire application, as opposed to the old mechanism where we had a lot of people working on a large app. We're trying to keep the application self-contained, couple of individuals creating the framework and hoping to create a community around it so we could get external contributors to it. And I think we've been fairly successful with that thing, with that approach with Mono.
So you had mentioned developing applications that you saw were needed under Linux or
yeah.
And F-Spot and
Banshee for
Banshee,
music playback.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, there already existed GThumb and Digicam for photo management.
Yeah.
Why F-Spot?
That's a good question. So F-Spot came out of the... We take... both Nat and myself got ourselves digital cameras a few years ago. And we both took more pictures than your average photo user. We took a lot of pictures. Right now my collection has something around 50,000 pictures. Wow. Nat probably has 10,000 more than I do, because he has about a year of he got the camera about a year before I did. So we've taken a lot of pictures, and the question is, how do we manage this picture collection? So Nat was using a proprietary system with a proprietary product, which will remain unnamed, to organize his photo collection. And I had basically just been dumping my pictures in directories, hoping that one day I would be able to manage that. And nothing really scales for these kind of loads today on Linux. So what we basically did is, it was a software that we originally wrote for the sole purpose of our own use. It's how do we manage large collections? So there's a couple of concepts built into F-Spot that Larry Ewing and Ettore Perazzoli built into this thing, which are tag management. So everything is stored in a database. You have tags, you can do queries on these things. It's really easy to tag pictures. I mean, we made it very natural to tag pictures. It's not very cumbersome as a standard UI would be, right? And another big element of it is that F-Spot had to be very fast. We wanted to be able to just press on the page down key and scroll quickly to find pictures, right? So we actually managed to do that all in C# with F-Spot. So it was basically an application that was suited for our needs, and we basically extrapolated and we said, listen, we have 50,000 pictures today. Most people we're going to have these kind of pictures in a few years. So we wanted to have a solid foundation for this kind of picture management. And the other applications, I think they're really fine. They're great, but they're either written... For example, you mentioned GThumb, which I think it's a fantastic app, but it's written in C, which means that it's not that fun to maintain. It's not that fun to hack on. And what we achieve with F-Spot is it's written in C#, which is a fun language. It's enjoyable to work on. And since it's running on Mono, you can do most of the code today is written in C#, but nothing is stopping anyone from using any of the .NET languages like Python or JavaScript or any of those things to extend F-Spot. So we wanted to make it fun. We wanted to... It's not about building the app alone. It's about making sure that the app will scale for the future. And we just didn't think that C or C++ were languages that we wanted to build on for the future. I mean, if you look at... looking at compilation times for C and C++ code, just compiling and linking is a huge step. And building the whole Mono... a whole Mono application like F-Spot takes... Building the whole source code takes less time than linking the equivalent C or C++ application. So it's kind of a productivity gain for us. So that's what we're looking at, that. Making an application that would age well. Not only the application, but the maintenance of it and the features that we would add in the future.
So you're looking for something that ages well. But what about, since it is Mono and .NET, what about cross-platform portability? How easy is it to get F-Spot running under, say, Microsoft's products?
So that is a trick question. We actually put a lot of dependencies, not because we want... They kind of happen, right? We wanted to take advantage of the fastest way we could get images in 2x, right? So we have to use low-level X features to get the images as fast as we could, doing a quick, fast render initially, and then, refining the image. So F-Spot plays a couple of tricks that might be hard to port. I'm not saying it's impossible to port, just nobody has bothered to do it. And it's using a couple of pieces in C code that talk directly with GTK. So it is not impossible to port it, but we haven't sat down to do it. And it's on my to-do list of things. We've been keeping it in mind not to depend too much on Linux-specific features, so we can eventually port it over to Windows.
I'm sitting here thinking, we have the big thing where Google's saying they're going to port over Picasso and using Wine.
Yeah.
But then you say, well, look at F-Spot, which can do a lot of that functionality. And it's almost like we already built on top of Mono, which has some hooks with .NET.
Yeah.
Why not go the other way? Why not take something like F-Spot?
I think we will.
That would be workable on all.
We just haven't done it. And I could probably take an afternoon to do it. As I said, we haven't done it. It's just a matter of having a lot on our plates. But it's something we keep in mind, and I keep telling Larry, please don't depend too much on Linuxism, because here's the thing. I think that if we bring F-Spot to the Windows platform, it's a fantastic tool, and I think that we're gonna increment the developer contributor base to F-Spot just by bringing it to Windows. And just like Firefox has been a success in the Windows world, I think that there's an opportunity now for open source applications to move to Windows. And the simpler they are to build and the simpler they are to to for people to hack on, the more contributions we're going to get. So I'm with you. I'm 100% with you.
Go ahead. Is the hope then, where you're saying, well, it's going to be simple to build it on Linux and port it to Windows, is the hope then for the reverse, that those applications that are built using the .NET framework for Windows would be
able
to be
absolutely.
Ported?
Absolutely.
Is that what the ultimate goal might be?
Well,
to see that?
You see, Mono started with one goal, improve our productivity, right? And as time went by, people joined the project, and Mono started to grow beyond just improve our productivity. All of a sudden, it turned out that we had a VM and a class library that was compatible with .NET. So we said, hey, we put the cycles, we can make the migration from Windows to Linux easier, and then we made it happen, right? So today Mono has multiple facades. One is, when we're pitching it to the open source community, it's mostly about increasing your productivity for desktop developers, right? But when you pitch it to the Windows community, those people are more interested in, hey, can I actually take an application and my expertise that I have on Windows development with Windows Forms or ASP.NET, and can I take that expertise and deploy it in 100 servers running Linux, right? Because a lot of people in the Windows space don't even consider the possibility of building systems like Google in terms of fault tolerance and multiple clusters, because the price is prohibitive, right? The price of licensing for Windows servers. So this is for the first time an opportunity that where they can mix their expertise, their software development expertise and their know-how with the fact that they can deploy into pretty much anything they want Linux-wise, right? So you can deploy on grids, you can deploy on clusters, you can deploy on chip machines, you can deploy on ARM computers or mainframes. So that is really appealing to Windows developers. So we have kind of a different story for different groups, because that's just the way that Mono evolved. We just had too many people coming in, and it's kind of grown into a thing that does more than just the original goal.
I got a question for you, Miguel. Have you gotten back feedback from Microsoft about what you're doing with Mono?
What kind of feedback do you mean? I mean,
positive, negative?
Well, I don't think I've ever seen a Microsoft guy saying, man, Mono is awesome.
You love what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm trying to get a guy on the record saying that. I got a couple of friends of mine that work at Microsoft that sign a couple of books for me, and they say, keep up the good work, that sort of thing. But no official.
No recognition either way.
No recognition. But eventually we'll get Microsoft to admit the beautifulness of Mono as an implementation of the .NET spec.
Have there been any problems with that end, you know, from Microsoft?
Not so far.
Been concerned.
No. We have a very good working relationship with Microsoft through ECMA. As I was telling someone a few minutes ago, one of the interesting things that happened with this .NET 2.0 is that they made a lot of changes to the language, C#, a lot of improvements. They made a lot of changes to the virtual machine support generics. And Microsoft was an extremely responsible citizen. They actually gave advanced specifications of all of these changes to ECMA 9 months before they showed this to the wrong customers. Right, so by the time the PDC came, PDC 2003, the Microsoft conference, we already had most of the generics implementation in the runtime implemented when they announced it for the first time at the PDC. So, because they had given us advance, they had given the committee advance notice, we had the documents, we were able to work with those. So, at the committee level, we've had a good relationship with them, and we also had a good relationship on a personal basis, engineer to engineer. It's just people we've met at the PDC, people we've met through the standards committee. We have a good relationship with those guys, and every once in a while we ask them questions. And sometimes, I mean, the most embarrassing one was when I was complaining to Anders Helsberg that how come your compiler does that? It's nowhere in the specification. This makes no sense. This looks like a bug, but I can't pin it down. I mean, this conversion shouldn't be happening. And I have this test that runs on your compiler, doesn't run on ours, and I can't find the spec. And I'm looking at section A, B, C, and it's not there where it's supposed to be. And it says, oh, you should look at ABC.1, which is the next paragraph. And I was like, oh, God. Oh, God, yeah, there it is. Well, I guess I stopped reading too soon. So, anyways.
So now, are you still working with GNOME? Or is it just...
Indirectly. I mean, my team is in charge of GTK Sharp, which is the .NET bindings. I mean... The Mono bindings for the GNOME APIs. So we still work very close together with the desktop guys in terms of providing them with the tools that they need. They come back to us and they say, we need better profiling tools, we need these things in Mono, we need this and that. So we still work closely with them, but we don't directly work on the desktop features. Every once in a while they say, hey, can you help us profile this? And we'll do the work, my team. So we have a team of 18 people right now working on that. on Mono.
So you're primarily doing the nuts and bolts stuff behind this.
That's right.
The system,
that's right.
The libraries, that's right.
So we're the tech support for all of our desktop guys. And,
okay.
And we can't take the credit for the beautiful work that they're doing, but we take the credit for being able to enable them to do that stuff. But the innovation is coming really from those guys.
Sharp Music is our friend DVD John, or Jan's program.
That's right.
To access iTunes and Linux.
Yes.
That's coded in Mono now, correct?
That is correct, yes. John is a great guy, and he was working on the Python version. And said, hey, John, I was looking at your Python code. I didn't want to install the Python dev, so I started writing my own code in Mono. Could you explain how this thing works? And he said, sure, I can explain it. And then I went to sleep, and the next day I had some meeting or something. And 2 days later, John said, hey, here's a re-implementation completely in C#. I just switched myself to Mono. So John is a great guy, and he's fantastic.
Great kid.
Yeah, and now he's working for MP3 Locker, I believe, which is a company that lets you upload your MP3 so you can have them available anywhere, anytime. So he actually, I don't know if it was him or someone else, they wrote a plugin for Banshee or Music Player that lets you basically play from Banshee anything on your MP3 Locker.
That's cool.
So it's great synergy there.
Definitely.
So now,
go ahead, Dan.
With Banshee,
yeah.
What I've read so far about this, and I tried it out a little bit.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but Novell has provided the community with a license to run MP3s through Banshee.
So the way it works is it's a little bit more complicated than that. The problem today is that the GPL disallows. You cannot ship GPL code if you cannot. If you cannot give the rights to use the patents that the GPL code might contain to third parties.
Right.
So the problem with most music players today is that they were GPL and they include an MP3 plugin, which means that the redistribution of the plugin and the software together, it's in violation of the GPL, right? Which is one of the reasons why they have to remove MP3 support, even if you get a license to it, because you cannot give unlimited access to the license. So Banshee is an X11 implementation, which is a weaker license than the GPL. It's still free, but it's weaker. Doesn't have this conflicting definition with MP3s. And Novell doesn't provide a blanket license to MP3s. Novell built a Banshee player, and when you get the... And my understanding is that when you get SUSE, you do get a licensed version. I mean, we have an agreement, I believe it's with Real, and Real make sure that we have the proper agreements in place for distributing the software, and they have paid the proper whatever that they have to pay to whoever owns the patent. So that's the situation, that basically we're able to deliver a complete solution that includes MP3 playback. Now, most of our users at home probably can just, they know about the YUM repository or a DAB repository that will get them MP3 support. But as a company, we couldn't ship that as part of our offering. And we couldn't really tell our customers, listen, just transcode all your MP3s to AUGs and you'll be fine. Right, that wasn't a solution. So we set out to provide a complete solution for people who just wanted to play MP3s out of the box, considering the fact that we couldn't really ship a GPL version of a player. So we basically want to give the full experience to an end user, and that's what we did.
So Banshee was written primarily to provide a player that you can use MP3 based upon licensing.
Or any other codec that might require you to get a license to play.
And we're talking audio codecs, right?
Yeah, Banshee right now only does audio.
Is there any inclination in the future that maybe Banshee or another similar product that's going to come out of Novell or another company is going to support the video codecs, like Windows Media Codecs? QuickTime.
I know that it's an ongoing talk, because we obviously want to provide something that does Windows Media Playback, DVD, and so on. And every once in a while, the meetings about the desktop happen in my office. I mean, in the same building, so I get to hear this. But I cannot give you a 100% answer on that, because I'm not the guy involved in that. The person who can give you a solid answer is Nat, and I think that you have a meeting with him, and he will give you a 100% clear answer on that.
So what we'll
I know
say
that the meetings
is,
have happened and that we want to do that, but I don't know where the state is on it.
So we'll tell Nat that Miguel said this is what's going on.
I'm gonna have to warn the man about that.
No, I'm just kidding.
Nat will give you a correct answer to that. I'm just speculating. My belief is that our enterprise product will have them, but it's a guess. I don't know for sure. I know that the discussion has been happening, but I don't know who's been involved in that.
So how is it working for Novell?
It's pretty good. I mean, I can't complain. My Mono project is moving along. The desktop, which I've been telling everybody for the last few years, everyone's like, well, when is this Linux desktop going to finally take off? And like, I always keep saying, well, 5 to 4 years. I mean, if you're a Linux geek, you can probably adopt it today, but the reality is for the mass market, it's 5 to 4 years away, sadly, because we lack this and that and that and that. And this is the first year where we're actually, you know what, we have the features there. XGL really drew a lot of attention to what we were doing. And that was interesting because it opened the door to a lot of people who had not seen Linux for a long time. So it was like, well, what is this thing? So it opened the doors to a lot of places, and people saw that what we had built on the Linux desktop was really fantastic. And Ned will probably go on and on about that, but the desktop search, the graphics effects, the media, all this stuff integrates. It's our new usability stuff that we did to make sure that the desktop was what people expect and not what we developers hope it should be the way it behaves. So actually, we've been to customers that started looking at this Novell Linux desktop and like, listen, this offering is pretty complete. I mean, really, why should we not be adopting this right away? I mean, just from a maintenance standpoint, right? Viruses and management of thousands of systems. You know, RPM is a fantastic system, and Windows is lacking. So we're talking to a lot of people, and a lot of people are saying, you know what, we might roll out large desktop installations. And it's the first time that I see these kind of smiles in customer faces or this desire to, let's get this done now, you know? Never seen it before.
That's because we had the opportunity with Vista. Vista doesn't look like it's coming out anytime soon, you know?
Yeah, well, there is a little bit of that, but I think that Windows people are pissed about this. There's the price, there's the ongoing taxes, the viruses and the Trojans. And I know that, honestly, deep down, it's a short-term opportunity. I know that if Linux were to have 100% of the market, we would also be plagued by malware.
Sure.
It's not really an endemic problem of Windows. I think that it comes with the ground. And there's a little bit of that. But, you know, I try to be more pragmatic. And I say, you know, if we had 100%, you would have all these kids writing this malware anyways and finding ways of exploiting it. So I think that there is a window, a fairly large window of opportunity to get Windows and Linux on a good footing. As your face pointed out, I think that Linux has a lot of good pieces in place, and we've had a culture of auditing, we've had a culture of security going on, that we're probably in a better position today than Microsoft is, and that might be better in the long term. But I don't want to overstate the Linux case, you know?
I see the big opportunity coming from the business side.
Yes.
A lot of companies, you know, have desktops that they've just purchased the last couple of years running XP, and now they're not going to be able to run Vista. So
I think that there's a lot of coming from that. There's a lot of emerging countries that are taking advantage of Linux. The fact that now computers cost a lot less than they used to cost in the past, you know? The United States market got saturated based on $2,000 computers, right, which is something that you couldn't really afford in Latin America or Africa or Asia or in some parts of Asia. And now computers are $300, $500 a machine, right, and it's a pretty hefty machine. So all of a sudden, computers are accessible in these remote locations of the world, and are you going to spend more on the software than you're going to spend on the machine itself, right? It doesn't seem... It doesn't click, right? So in a lot of places, there's adoption happening for Linux just because it's open source. And I think that's fantastic.
We had Bruce Perens here a few minutes ago in the hot seat. And one of the things he brought up about being problematic, particularly in developing for a web environment, is the number of APIs out there.
For a web environment?
Well, he was talking about there being, you know, there's Ruby, JavaScript, MySQL, Java.
Yes.
Now, of course, we go into the Linux environment, or in any environment now, open environment, we have a huge number of programming languages. And has that been, and now we have Mono, mm-hmm. is contributing to that. And has that been a problem that you see with people wanting to adopt Linux as a developmental platform with the businesses and developers that you've spoken with that were on the Windows side?
So Mono and .NET have a particular interesting attribute, which is they were designed to be virtual machines for any language. So actually Microsoft went through a lot of trouble to engage with commercial compiler vendors and saying, here's a VM. Let me know what is missing for your compiler to run. So they went to the Fortran vendor, the COBOL vendors, all those legacy systems, and made sure that they would run properly. And they also went to the research community and say, can you run your research compiler in this VM and let us know what you need? So they added the extensions to the VM to support these languages. So Monoskin is a multi-language play. Now, there is a lot of diversity, and I think that diversity is fantastic. I was talking today in a panel about J2E, LAMP versus .NET, and I was kind of bringing a message of hope, you know, because when it comes to web platforms and when it comes to all of these things, it's a matter of lifestyle. See, and what I was saying during the talk is some of us have chosen to be programmers. Some other people have chosen to be lawyers, right? We have Evan Moglen leading a successful lawyer life, innovating in the licensing space, right? Or you can be doctors or you can be teachers. And you can have one lifestyle fits them all, right? So depending on what you're doing, what problems you're solving, what kind of environment you're moving, you're going to use that one technology or the other. Like somebody was saying, well, everybody must use Java because Java is, and he gave a long list of features, right? And then the next guy was saying, well, you should use this because long list of features. And you know what? The problem is that these long list of features are probably perfect for a doctor and these others are perfectly for a lawyer. And people are kind of not seeing that disconnect, that different domain problem. I mean, different domains will require different tools. So there's a little bit of that. There's a little bit of a lifestyle. There's a little bit of personal choice. Just like I might like a better red shirt than I would like a green shirt, or I like my car to be whatever, diesel-powered or electricity. I mean, there's a matter of lifestyle, right? Just like the iPod comes in five colors, right?
Right.
You know, or why did you choose a pen over the other? So there's an element of lifestyle, an element of personal choice in these things. And so I don't think there's going to be one framework to rule everybody out. And I think that Mono does contribute to enhance this universe of choices more than saying, well, everybody should develop on Mono, or everybody should develop on Java, or everybody should develop on PHP or anything. I think we have a fantastic ecosystem today. And what matters the most at the end of the day, I think, is that we can interop. So we should put a lot of attention in making sure that .NET can talk to Java, and .NET and Java can talk to PHP, and PHP to Perl, and all of these things. And if anything, I think that Ruby on Rails this year demonstrated that there's still a lot of room for innovation. These guys came up with a fantastically brilliant way of developing applications. People seem to have missed the boat and gone on an overcomplicated way. And these guys said, listen, we can get MVC, but doing it very cleanly, very nicely. So if anything, it's showing there's still room for more innovation, for getting more ideas into the pool. Now, sometimes you have conflicting goals. You have the enterprise people trying to deploy something saying, hey, listen, please stop making changes. We want to take this and run with it. And on the other hand, you have people trying to write less code, trying to do more with less, right, and driving innovation. So you're always going to have these two forces, right? And it's like any other market. This is the technology curve of adoption. You're always going to have people innovating. You're always going to have a technology which is going on the rise and technology which is facing out. And I think there's room for everything.
That's good.
Good stuff, man. Where would you like to see Mono go in the next, say, 2-3 years?
Well, I think I would like to improve the performance of Mono. We've been doing a lot of work in the performance area of Mono, and we really want to polish that up. The work hasn't been landed yet on CVS, but we've been working behind on a branch, basically. And we want to get that performance improvement to people. We want to ship Mono 2.0 because it comes with a lot of new features. .NET 2.0 has a lot of new features that we want to include. And if I had my personal wish item is, we want to also be able to bring WPF, Windows Presentation, well, what used to be called Avalon. I think Avalon, it looks nice. I would like to bring Avalon to Linux with Mono. I don't know if I'm going to do it, but it would be my personal wish list item. We asked recently the community what you want in Mono, and we got a list of about 60 features that people would like all over the spectrum. So we're going to be looking at what is the things that make the most sense, and we're going to bring in those to Mono. But,
what?
I mean, there's a lot of room to grow.
What was the Avalon technology?
Avalon
again?
Is this new vector 3D.
Okay.
It's where they merge media, 3D, and 2D in one API.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was.
And they use XAML, an XML declarative language for doing apps.
Uh-huh.
I think that Microsoft is trying to take over the web with this thing. That's my gut feeling. And we're there, and Mono is going to be there to make sure that if they try to do that, we're going to make sure that the apps run on Linux.
So you make sure that's going to happen, that they can take over the web.
Well, you know.
You know what?
We're very friendly people. We love everybody, so.
Sounds like a plan.
We're a project of love, you know? I mean, I think that people were expecting on the Java versus .NET thing to be a fight about which technology is better, but we're all in the same. We're all developers, you know?
It all depends on what solution is best for you. For
yeah, and I think that Mono, I think, of course, I'm emotionally attached to Mono, and I think it's a fantastic technology, but I also realize that we have to interrupt, so there's a lot of work going into interrupt.
Let me ask you, does Novell give you free rein as far as Mono, direction it goes in, or...?
Well, I think that my goals are very aligned today with Novell's immediate needs. So the way I looked at Mono is, initially you're going to have these early adopters trying it out, and the problem with early adopters is that they will try out anything, right? So what you need to make sure is that the early adopters and the innovators kind of, that you satisfy their needs so you can move into the next stage of the market, which is the people who are going to be making these adoptions and they're going to bring into the mainstream. So I've spent a lot of time on Mono. I want the right thing to happen to Mono. So for that thing to happen, we're trying to put a lot of emphasis in making sure that we're solving people's problems. So I know that the people who are going to, the early adopters, we're going to try it, and they're going to try everything. So we need to leverage those guys and make sure that those guys help us get to the next market, which is the people who are trying this out for real, right? So we're making sure that every bug that people report, every issue that people have, we're fixing them. And that's very aligned, kind of, people might say that that's an enterprise view of the problem. I'm thinking more in terms of the viability of Mono as a platform is going to be linked to its user base. So I need to make sure that the users and developers adopt this technology. So that's why there's the goals are aligned for that reason.
So what do you use for development then?
Me?
Yeah.
I still use Emacs.
Emacs?
Yeah.
That's the best.
All habits die hard. It's funny because I develop with Emacs, but when I edit quickly a file, I always type VI. I was like, why am I doing that? So one day I said alias VI equals user bin Emacs, right? So I would say VI, and I would get Emacs, and I would type, edit something. And subconsciously, I started typing on the shell user bin VI. So it didn't work. My alias didn't work, and I ended up using VI anyway. So I removed the alias because it didn't work. I don't know what's going wrong in my brain, but for small files, I always use VI. For large editing sessions, I'll use Emacs.
No, your brain is working fine. VI is what you're supposed to use to edit a file.
Yeah. I'm just saying, even when I aliased it, I started typing the full path name.
Well, because subconsciously you understand that Emacs is an entire operating system and you just want to do some coding or something.
That's right.
So you need to use VI, and that's how it works. So.
Now, the sad thing is every once in a while, I also will use Visual Studio, and I feel, oh, this is nice. And we also use, I mean, we develop MonoDevelop these days, and everyone said I use MonoDevelop, but really my IDE of day-to-day basis is Emacs.
So, and of course you use GNOME on the desktop?
Yeah, pure GNOME. I mean, not been using anything else since pretty much we started it.
And you're running SUSE as your preferred?
Yes, that's my, I'm using OpenSUSE 10 right now. Nat, which is the guy who runs the desktop, actually runs the beta every day.
Right.
I'm more conservative, I like to my OS to be tested. Mm-hmm. So I'm still in the previous version.
So as one of the major programmers in Novell right now for the Linux side of things, what kind of things do you want to see happen on the desktop? What innovations are you looking for so that when we go talk to Nat tomorrow, we can say, listen, Miguel said, we're lacking over here, buddy. Fix
it up.
Well,
you know what, Nat, I think that Nat is doing a fantastic job. I couldn't think of anyone doing a better job on the desktop. It's a good mix again of, it's a good mix of understanding the user problems, and that's why he launched this large effort called Better Desktop, where we type hundreds and hundreds of hours. I mean, the usability office is next to my office in the building here in Cambridge, and they'll have these guys come over and over every day. There will be people coming to this little office where we videotape them, and we study the reactions to Linux desktop, and we see, well, that didn't work, did it? So we have to go back and fix the software, and we have the engineers watch the videos and see what was wrong and fix the software and come up with proposals. Right. And we have Anna's team writing mock-ups and developing mock-up software to see how we should enhance the desktop. So I think that when it comes to Nat, he really knows what he's doing. He's not doing it just by gut instinct. He actually went and got field data, something that I've never seen any other company do in the Linux space.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We actually went, got field data, found what was wrong with Linux desktop, and we started fixing it. So I don't know. I mean, the kind of things that I would like personally, and I'm learning guitar to play guitar these days, right. And I would like to have something, some kind of software for doing my own, my home mixing and my home processing of music. Of course, if the application is built on Mono, it will probably get my attention. I used to say I want to edit my videos.
Make down to that, Jono.
Python called Jakarta. Is that Jakarta?
The only thing, I mean, I don't mind Python, but I think that for large, it's the way my brain operates. I think I like strong typing on my applications. Uh-huh. So just the way I work, and I just don't enjoy hacking on dynamic type systems. There's nothing wrong with them. It's just the way my brain works. So if I were to contribute to an effort like this, it would probably have to be strongly typed. Just like this, we're building these guys through Google. It's actually a project that Google funded during the summer called Diva. And it's basically a video editor like Avid or iMovie or iDVD. So it does iMovie and iDVD features. It's all built on Mono.
Right.
Tons of plugins, fantastic architecture, very clean code. And it's using strong typing, very few bugs in the application. I mean, it's a fantastic little piece of code. So my emotion is kind of attached to Mono. But if somebody builds one in Python, I'll use it in Python.
When can we see a usable version of Diva?
I have it run it right now. There's a race condition right now that will hang the application if you try to do a play with multiple streams. But I can show it to you. It's fantastic. It's mind-blowing. They're adding right now video camera import so that you can hook up the camera and import it. Now, the new version of OpenSUSE comes with all the drivers and all the plug-and-play to do that. So I'm very happy about that. In my machine, I don't have that yet configured. And they're also doing all the transcoders because it's built in GStreamer, and GStreamer doesn't support arbitrary positioning of streams. So we have to transcode to WAV. But they're fixing that, too, with the GStreamer guys. So, I mean, in general, I'm pretty happy. And it's working great. I mean, Diva, it's an effort of one guy, and right now Google is financing the project because it was such a well-done, such a well-polished application from Diva.
So within the next 6 months, we're going to see
absolutely
the Diva, something that we could actually begin using.
Yes, absolutely. And I can't wait to do my my own home video recordings. We've been doing this. We've been lampooning our friends with a bunch of really bad songs that we've written. And we play on video for this thing.
Uh-huh.
So we can't wait to do a video of this. Of our own very bad songs about our friends.
Well, I can't wait to see the programs because we do some video stuff. And we use Kino primarily.
What is Kino?
Kino. It's a
video editor.
It's a video editor.
I've seen it. Yes. Is that a KD based?
Yes.
That's why I don't
use
it. Yeah.
QT.
Yeah. It goes against everything I believe in.
There we go.
So.
Have you ever actually tried using it?
It goes against everything I believe in.
You can't.
It's cool, man.
Yeah. So, anyways, maybe I give it a shot. But, you know, I'm helping the Diva guy and Michael, which is a fantastic, fantastic hacker. And, again, I think it's more maintainable and it's going to age better if we develop it on C#. So just from that standpoint, I rather encourage and get people working on that. But I'm sure Kino is a fantastic app, and I love you, Kino guys, if you're listening. Big kiss.
I look forward to seeing Diva real soon.
Sounds good.
I mean, I tried looking at it, but, again... it's what, only CVS?
Because you need GStreamer, you need S-Cons, but don't worry, we'll get it out in your hands by the next. I mean, Nat is so excited by the UI. He's so excited. He's like, we have to get this on a service pack. We have to get this on a service pack. I mean, he's that good. I don't know if he's going to be able to get that through the enterprise policy, you know, the enterprise police that's going to say, hey, this is a new product, can't go on an SP. But he wants to try.
So it'll be out in the OpenSUSE very soon.
Oh, in OpenSUSE, it's going to make it, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about the enterprise. He wants to get this to the enterprise people because it's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I don't know why, but that is weird that way.
Well, you know what? Just thinking about that, I mean, there's a couple of things that I look at that hold Linux adoption back, and primarily I work in a school district, and one of them is the video codecs, because they want, you know, there's educational videos they want to see.
Yeah.
Another one is they, you know, when... They talk about the Apple platform developing videos and, you know, putting together a video. And if you can make something that's as easy to use as, like, iMovie under Linux, hey.
We'll give you that. We're not only going to give you that, but the guy from Diva actually built APIs for doing your own video application. So you don't need to have the full Diva thing. You just build your API, and it will do the mixing, it will do the alpha encoding, it will do the effects. It will. So it's an API that, so you write a little C# program, And you can do whatever you want, embed it into your real app, do whatever you want, transcode it, generate MPEGs on the flight. I mean, I don't know if they do Flash, but it should with JStreamer. So it is pretty amazing.
Good stuff, man.
I look forward to it.
Wrap it
so
up.
It's all about kicking ass on the desktop. And of course, we also love you server guys, and we'll give you ASP.NET and all the love that comes with that. But my heart is with the desktop.
Oh, well, that's good. There we go. I want to thank you very much.
Hey, thank you so much, guys, for having
down.
Me here.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you.
Great talk to you.
Thank you, Patrick.
Keep doing a great job. You don't have to say thank you to him. He's a
All right. Thank you so much. Link's your name?
Link.
Fantastic. I like that. All right.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Take it easy, man. Thank you very much.